Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of PGP Radio. As always, I'm your host, Vin. And let's get this show underway. Tonight, we're planning on doing linebacker prospects and secondary, if we have time, plus a little bit of news this week. Given the fact that I am a terrible host and started this show way late, doubt seriously we'll get the secondary tonight. So I will likely be pushed back to next week. In which case, we're going to be super busy next week. Probably finish up with secondary on Friday. And then Saturday will likely be a back-to-back mock draft show, depending on who all is interested and who all we have on. If it's just me and another guy or another person, I could probably blaze through. But usually if there's multiple people, it takes multiple shows. So, yeah. So there we go. Without further ado, let's get this thing started. A couple called in. I just moved away from the studio, and now I'm back here. All right. I think we got, I think this is Bada. I think this is Bada. Hopefully it's Bada. Hello, sir.
Good evening.
All right. There we go. There's Bada, and here is, once I'm back in the studio. All right. And here is, I think this is Cherry. I think. I hope.
Yep, that's me.
All right, it's true.
I tried to beat Butter.
Hello, gentlemen.
But I got here first.
You did. It was, we both pretty much popped in at the same time. All right, so I guess without further ado, we'll get this thing started. But linebacker show tonight, but I really want to ask you guys, so what do you guys think about the Rams moving up to number one to take whatever quarterback they're going to take?
Go ahead, buddy. You can trash it.
Oh. Wait, what? Trash it? I'm not against the move, necessarily. I think it was shocking, like most people feel. I didn't see it coming. I like how everybody is like, why the Rams had to make this move. And I'm like, well, no one predicted it, so obviously they didn't have to do it because no one saw it coming. But it's interesting. I think they gave up a little too much. I understand this year and next year's first-round pick, but 2 second-round picks is really where I'm like, that's a little, you know, too much, because at least if you give up your first-round pick, you want to be able to pick in round two. So that kind of handicaps you, but you got to assume it's a quarterback. I personally don't think they're a quarterback away from, like, flipping the switch completely, so I'm not sure I would have made the move, so I don't know, but I guess.
I mean, I think it was a good move for the Rams. I think it's, for one, it's a good public move. It gets them in the spotlight. You're moving to Los Angeles, and everyone who is going to be jumping onto the Rams wagon in Los Angeles, they get to start their franchise there. They get the number one overall pick, and they're going to take their franchise quarterback. So it's definitely exciting. I think it's a smart move for the organization, not just the team and itself, but the whole organization. I really hope they take Goff. I think Goff fits what they do better. But I'm not too upset with the decision to move up. Obviously, I like Paxton Lynch the most. I'd prefer them to sit there and just take Paxton at number 15 or maybe move up just a little bit to get him, maybe move to number 7 or 8 or something like that. But at the end of the day, the Rams already tried to be on the other end of that. They tried to get a King's Ransom for RG3, and it didn't pan out for them. I mean, they went from being a 4-12 team to a 7-9 team. So I think they're just trying to flip it the other way, see if a QB can get them in competition, can get them in the playoffs again, and actually move somewhere instead of sitting in mediocrity.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at this from a couple different standpoints. And, I mean, looking at it from the Rams side, I said what I thought. But from the Titans side, it was really smart. It was interesting to see somebody move off the number one pick. I know we had that big trade for the Redskins to get to number two and everything. But number one usually is a little more tougher to move. So it was interesting that they were able to get that move. But it looks great for them because the whole time, none of the people they were talking about them taking really fit what I thought they needed, at least at number one. This is a year where there's no clear-cut number one. So from the Titans side, I think is really smart. And then Jeff Fisher, like you said, he hasn't been doing much with the team, so I thought about it like he's going to get fired anyway, so might as well bet the farm, you know, and try to turn it all around with one shot. So I think it was smart of Jeff Fisher because in a few years, if they had bad seasons, him and the GM were going to be out anyway.
I mean, I think they would have got maybe another season or two at the most, but if they have Goff around and Goff shows promise, I think they could get three or four more seasons. Their team right now, though, is just it's not a competing team. They go 6-10 or 7-9, regardless of who they draft, unless you got Paxton Lynch. You're not going to be able to fill the holes with the guys you lose. I mean, Chris Long, you lose him. You have William Hayes, who could fill in, but you lose Laurinaitis. You lose Rodney McLeod. You lose Janoris Jenkins. You lose a lot of these talented guys on that defense, and your offense is still a long way away from being great. You have no wide receiver talent. You have a mediocre line. You have a Case Keenum as your starting quarterback. Really, the only bright spot on the offense is Todd Gurley. So going after a franchise QB and trying to build around him instead of building the team around Case Keenum, I think, is a smarter move there. And as you said, the Titans also did a great job. Instead of sitting at number one and taking Tunzel or Jalen Ramsey, even though Jalen Ramsey is incredibly talented, they're getting two firsts, two seconds, and two thirds out of it. So you can't argue with that kind of haul for one pick.
Yeah, I definitely think that's accurate. And like you mentioned, I mean, for the Rams, it's a good move because you're essentially, I mean, this move to LA is essentially a fresh start. So why not take a quarterback? I don't like how much they gave up for it. I guess that's the. I mean, I guess that's kind of the going rate for this. But just how screwed is whichever quarterback they draft if he doesn't pan out? You know, like right off the bat. I mean, you give up that much. We've seen teams that have given up essentially a boatload for a single player. The RG3 trade a couple years ago. The Julio Jones trade a few years ago. That. You know, hasn't necessarily paid off in dividends. Obviously, you know, Julio's a great player, but, I mean, you take him off the Falcons and you've still got essentially a team that's not, you know, a playoff contender. So, I mean, just looking at that, how much unnecessary pressure does this trade now put on, you know, Goff or Carson Wentz, even more so, especially if it's Wentz, even more so on him. Yeah, how much – I mean, what are we looking at here? Does it matter?
That's tough. I mean, well, what I was thinking about earlier, like I said, if I'm Fisher and you ask me, do we want to give up all those picks, I say, yeah, because right now I'm on shaky ground anyway. And a lot of people, like Cherry, they believe he bought himself some seasons with a new quarterback, or if they get, you know, a quarterback. But to me, if I'm an owner and I'm, like, okay in this huge trade, I would have to be in love with the guy enough to say I'm going to put my eggs in the basket with him no matter who the coach is. So if it's a bad season, I don't think I necessarily wouldn't be against firing Jeff Fisher, especially because he's been there for so long. So So I'm like, you know, I like this guy enough, bring me a new coach. So I don't think the coaches are completely safe just because they made this move. So, I mean, I guess with that being said, there is pressure from the GM and the coaching side to kind of, you know, immediately turn it around. But as the owner, I feel like the owner is going to back them until they can anymore. And we see that with every quarterback, with Johnny Manziel and RG3 and how bad that stuff was. So I think there's pressure, but from the big boss, I don't think it'll be like a crazy amount of pressure than it would have been for any other quarterback.
I think that the Rams are going to be fine in terms of pressure. I don't think that the high management's going to cut Snead and Fisher because of the fact that they make this trade and they don't immediately start winning rings. I think that they understand that it's going to take a while. They tried to do something. They tried to do the opposite with the RG3 trade. They tried to build a team from a bunch of different picks instead of going for one guy and getting one QB to build on. And it didn't work out for them. I mean, they made a better team. They made a more talented team. But they still are consistently falling behind the Cardinals and Seahawks of the NFL. So I think that they'll give them 2 to 3 more years and see how Goff develops. If it ends up they're Goff or Wentz, I feel like they're going to take Goff. But either one, I think they're going to give them 2 to 3 years. If the Rams go like 3-13 or something, look pathetic, they might fire him. But I think there's a lot less pressure than people think when it comes to the Rams. I think they're trying to put everything behind Goff and having a stable franchise as they move to L.A.
Yeah, and having Todd Gurley also changes that. I mean, the offensive line right now is built to run block. As we know, they're not that great at pass blocking. So having a strong running game and a good defense, we don't know if they'll be as good as last year, but a good defense takes a lot of pressure off whoever they bring in for the quarterback.
Running game is the quarterback's best friend, so hopefully for whoever they draft, it'll work out for them. Because it's, again, you give up that much, hopefully you get something good in return. So, all right. And with that, got that trade out of the way, and now we shall move on to what this show is actually about, the this linebacker crop, which a few months ago, probably looks better than it does right now. Obviously, with the injuries that have kind of been racked up now, you have Jalen Smith essentially going to miss this upcoming season due to his knee issues, and now he's got Miles Jack with just some question marks going into this, and it's just. It's a bad time for linebackers, but overall, minus, I guess, those two, how do we feel about this class? I mean, it seems like, to me, this actually seems like a pretty decent linebacker crop, I should say.
I mean, outside of those two, there's not a lot that I like to talk about, but, I mean... There are some guys, I guess. So if we're not talking about those two, I guess the next person you would have to go to is Reggie Ragland. And he's interesting just because you see glimpses of him having three down linebacker qualities, but, you know, with his size, it's most likely not going to translate. But he has lost weight in the off season. He looked, you know, slimmer in the combine and everything. So I don't think it'll be a stretch for him to get with a good staff and really form himself into someone that could play three down and still have that attitude that he played with. But Alabama guys tend to, you know, have really low ceilings just because they maximize their potential so much. So I can't, you know, say he's like a must-get prospect or anything like that. And then really outside of that, you got Darren Lee, and I'm not too big on him like everybody else. It's, I mean, like I said this year, I keep saying it, there's a lot of prospects that I don't agree should be top prospects, and he's one of them. I think he's all flash and no substance. He's all speed, and that's all everybody wants to look at. And so he's definitely going to go in the top 20 or so, but I don't know how good of a linebacker he is. But I've seen linebackers that kind of get put in the right spot and end up proving me wrong, sort of. Like Shazier is the one I'm thinking of, and it's funny they went to Ohio State, but he was one I really was like, I don't get how, you know, this is going to work for him. And the Steelers is a good place to go for a defender, but I would even say his two seasons have been a mixed bag so far. Like, he's definitely shown the spot where he looks the part, but there's a lot of times where he's just getting destroyed by blocks. So I feel like he's going to be a lot in line with what Ryan Shazier is doing.
I mean, I'll cover the whole Jalen Smith thing first. I completely changed how I grade my guys in terms of what I have a new scale that I put them on. Jack is the highest out of all my guys. He's the only guy I have ranked as a potential Hall of Famer. Just watching Jack on tape, he's one of the most impressive prospects I've ever seen. Dude can play 7 different positions. He can play from cornerback to safety to defensive end. He's just ridiculous. He just has measurables that are off the charts, and he's a very smart football player. I'm not sure the extent of his injury. I know it's not as bad as Jalen Smith. I know there's not nerve damage and stuff, but there are teams that are concerned about him re-tearing that meniscus. I'm not going to go into guesses on how a guy's going to do after an injury. I just put my blind faith in that they heal properly and don't get injured again. So I would say that Jack's easily the best linebacker. Smith, again, I don't want to put any I don't want to put out any guess on if he's going to heal properly. There's a lot of teams that are really concerned about that. I think majority of people think he's going to kind of have knee issues if he does end up playing in the NFL. But he's probably the number two guy. He's really high up there as well. Linebackers beyond that, I disagree with you, but I don't think that Darren Lee is lower than Reggie Ragland. I think that Ragland is a lot less versatile than Lee, I guess. I think Lee is very good at filling the holes. He's very good at he's not the go-up-and-hit kind of guy like Ragland is, but he's very good in coverage. He'll wait for the runner to come through and then fill up and go up and hit the guy instead of trying to charge. And he's usually a really good wrap-up tackle. I'm not saying that Ragland isn't, but I would say he's better in pass coverage. And just he's, as I said, a lot more versatile. Then there's not many that there's not many good linebackers beyond that. You can make an argument for, like, Kevin Dodd as an outside linebacker, or Leonard Floyd's potential, but it's a pretty weak linebacker class.
Yeah, I don't count pass rushers as linebackers. They're not linebackers to me. So, Antonio Morrison. Yeah, I like Antonio Morrison out of Florida, actually. I know he had an injury problem before, but he came back real strong. He doesn't have, like, typical size, but he has the typical attitude of an inside linebacker. I really like him. And then, actually, I like Joshua Perry from Ohio State better than Darren Lee. I agree with you about the coverage and stuff like that, but, you know, linebacker is a lot about attitude, and if you don't have the attitude to take on blocks and stop the run, it's just something about it, like, they really turned me off. And that's just me, you know, personally. And Joshua Perry, you know, he weighed in at 6'4", 250-plus. So he's a lot bigger than Reggie Ragland, but you would never know it. And so, because he moves so well. Like, you know, not as well as Lee, but he's one of those athletes, too, that Ohio State has. So I like him as a linebacker. And then the other one is Tyler Matakavich, which I know Cherry picked kind of early in the mock draft, but I don't see him going that high in the actual draft. He has all the awards you can get as a linebacker. He looks good on tape and everything, but he's just one of those guys where he's not going to flash to these scouts, and you really got to kind of take a flyer with him, because if you take him, you got to really put him in the situation where he's on a good defense to make plays. So he's not going to create it himself. He just lacks the speed and the strength. But if he gets in front of a, you know, stout defensive line where he can really run around and make plays, that's, you know, that's fine. But, you know, these kind of thumper middle linebackers, it's getting harder and harder to get them in the league because we're going to defenses that want to be a lot more faster and, you know, coverage-oriented to face tight ends and stuff. And so these guys that lack, you know, sideline to sideline movement, is getting harder and harder to translate them from college to the pros. So I don't really know where he goes. I think he's a round 3 to 4. But as far as skills, he probably has, you know, the most of what you're looking for out of the linebackers. But, you know, it's just it is what it is.
I kind of jumbled my explanation a little bit on Lee, so I'm going to go ahead and clear that up. What I meant by it, though, was, like, he's not a guy who's – he reminds me a lot of Eric Kendricks, basically. He's not a guy who's a very physical guy. He's a decent tackler, but he's not going to go up and, as I said, put a hit on anyone. But I think he's just a very good center of the defense kind of guy. And it looked like he really helped control where Ohio State was going defensively and how are they were going to prepare to stop any run or a short pass and stuff underneath. I know you've had this issue with a lot of linebackers before in the past with Matakovich, but, like, it was the same thing with Perriman, for instance. It's not a guy that is going to flash. It's not a guy that's going to really make you jump out of your seat with your athleticism or anything like that, but it's a very well-rounded kind of player, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Perriman was more athletic than this guy, though. That is true.
That is true. Perriman. A little bit more athletic than him.
Yeah,
he was undersized in comparison to Matakovich, though.
He was shorter than him and stuff. But Matakovich is just so limited. He's a stiff guy. His hips are so stiff, and so it just limits his movement. But he's a good linebacker. I don't know. I mean, it's always tough with those guys. It really seems like, unless they end up on a stacked team, they kind of don't, you know, ever go anywhere. So we'll see kind of where he falls. But to go back to the injury talk, but with those guys, the medical check rechecks just happened, and Miles Jack, who seemed fine, now they're talking about some teams are worried about his long-term health and everything, even though it looks fine. I really think most of that is smoke screens because some people are talking about him falling a little bit. I don't think Miles Jack will fall. I think he'll still be a top 5 pick. So I'm hoping that most of that stuff is smoke screens because he hurt his knee like way earlier in the year. It wasn't like right at the end of the year like Jalen Smith. So he's had plenty of time to heal up. And he's one of those faster guys, and guys with a lot of quick twitch muscle fiber usually heal up pretty quickly, or they at least bounce back as well. With Jalen Smith, that's a sad one. I mean, the problem with him, of course, is his nerve damage. It's not, you know, really an ACL tear where you could come back from that pretty decently nowadays. It's more about the nerve damage in his knee, which has no real timetable on it. And I'm really interested to see where he goes. I mean, but his medical recheck, basically coming back exactly as it was in February, doesn't help. So, I don't know. Someone might snag him at the end of the second round. But I honestly think he could fall into either round 3 or 4.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he fell even past that. I could see if it really the nerve damage is that bad and teams are that worried about, I could see him going all the way down to 5 and being like kind of like a Lattimore situation. That's what I saw it compared to, is it's the worst knee injury for a guy coming in since Lattimore. So I wouldn't be shocked if he fell that far if teams are really that scared about the nerve damage. I picked him just because I'm not going to factor in injuries into how I value a guy and where I would place him, but obviously you can't do that if you're actually picking the guy. You gotta be concerned about his physical health.
Yes, I guess this Jack situation is a lot similar to the JGI situation last year with his knee injuries, and you know, teams kind of expecting or unsure of you know, his longevity. Of course, that's a little different because I don't think Ajayi was, you know, as highly thought of as Jack is to his specific class. But probably agree with Butta. He's still going to be taken that high. I mean, I've seen some teams or you know, reports of teams that are viewing Jack as a safety. And it's just any player who has that amount of versatility and can play essentially anywhere is going to get taken, even if there are injury issues, whatnot. If you can play, you're going to get picked probably relatively high. So that's – it's just kind of interesting. We get close to the draft and all these interesting stories come out, and you have – and I mean, really, you have no idea what you know, what's true, what's not, what's just, you know, teams leaking stuff just for the you know, grins and giggles of it, or you know, if it's actually legit stuff. Which I mean is one of the things that makes this time of year entertaining, but another when it's you know you finally get to draft day and everything you think is going to happen doesn't, because everything you've been fed for the past 3 weeks has been a lie.
Yeah, the gamesmanship of it is, I mean, it's fun to a point because us as fans, we never figure out what was true and what wasn't, you know what I mean? So we never really figure out what was a smokescreen to a certain extent. So it's fun to a point to speculate, but it'd be nice if we kind of had those questions answered. But no, I agree with you, like, it's the gamesmanship of the season, of the draft. I honestly think when it's people like it's half teams saying it looks bad, half teams think it's good. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, like always, where it's probably not enough to knock him down out of his draft spot. But some people are trying to put that out there, you know, to push him down towards them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly always always interesting to see how it goes. All right, but I know you mentioned you didn't really want to talk about pass rushers per se, but Cherry hates Leonard Floyd. You have if memory serves, you have a different opinion on Floyd than Cherry does, correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I want you to fight right now.
Well, I mean, it's funny because like every single mock draft I'm looking at now has Leonard Floyd going to the Bears because people have finally I don't know, stopped smoking whatever they were and realized that my boy Ronnie Staley is actually pretty good and stopped dropping him all the way to 11, which I would love to happen, don't get me wrong. But all these mocks before, I'm like, what? You got all these people passing up Ronnie Staley, who is better than Tunsil? But people are finally waking up to that. But anyway, I don't want Leonard Floyd personally, not against him. It's just I think the Bears have other fish to fry. But I don't see what's not to like. He reminds me exactly of Alden Smith coming out of college. He has a long, lean frame that if you put on muscle – makes for a great pass rusher. His explosion off the ball is ridiculous, and his ability to lean around the edge is ridiculous too. It's the best in this draft, I would say slightly above Bronson Kapusi. So he has all the makings of what you want in the pass rusher. And then this year they had him play a traditional stack linebacker on, you know, first and second down. So that versatility really excites you too, because he understands linebacker from the traditional position and not just a glorified defensive end like most of these guys are. So, I think there's no question. It's funny because I put together my stuff for the summer for the team I coach for, and my pitcher for the get off is a picture of Leonard Floyd. It's a still image where the ball is height and it's not even to the quarterback yet, and he's almost past the tackle. Like, that's explosion.
I mean, I won't argue with that. Leonard Floyd has an absolutely amazing get off. He's one of the quickest guys off the snap that in this draft class or even in part of the past decade. But my issue with him is he isn't big enough, in my opinion, to actually get past the tackle. He's not big enough to get any push. I mean, if he just immediately gets around the edge and can go that quick around a guy, then sure. But a lot of times I'll see him get held up by tackles who aren't even that good, to be honest. Guys who all they have to do is they just have to get their arm out and stop him from cutting the edge on him. He's just stopped completely. He has almost no power to him. He's very well-refined pass rusher. He doesn't have pass rushing moves. He can't swim or spin around a guy or anything like that. Really, all he has is just try to get around the edge as fast as possible. If someone wants to put him as a 4-3 outside linebacker, I could see them doing that. But if you're just going for a pass rushing guy alone, it's going to be very tough to get him to succeed at the next level with his lack of strength.
Yeah, I think me and Cherry just have real different opinions on this on him. I mean, I thought he was a good pass rusher. And especially if you look at this year, it was kind of difficult to find a lot of stuff because, like I said, he was playing more of a traditional linebacker. But when he, you know, hand on the ground, came off the edge, I thought he was really good. I thought he had the pass rush technique and the hand technique. I liked what he gave us. I mean, of course, he's not the guy in the run game that that you want right now. But, again, this is a guy with a frame built to add on weight. A lot of these college guys, that's kind of how they want him to play, more lanky and, you know, speed. But once you get to the league, it's all about adding on that muscle mass. I'm looking at his combine. Yeah, his arm length. He doesn't have, like, elite arm length like you would want those guys with those, you know, ridiculously octopus arms. But still, and actually looking at this, he put on quite a bit of weight for the combine. Looks like he put on 10 pounds from his playing weight.
Yeah, 10 or 15 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, Vince said he put on about 15 pounds, and even then he's only around 245-ish.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what you'll get. You don't want too much. I mean, because you think Bud Dupree last year was probably 250 plus, almost 260, and everyone's like, well, you're too big. And, you know, he's right around that sweet spot once you get to 250, and actually measured out at 6'6". So, yeah, I mean, his length is probably more in his legs than his arms. You would probably want someone with a little longer arms, but this guy just reeks explosion. I think he'll be pretty good. I think he could play the 4-3 or the 3-4 DM. I mean, pass rusher. So, I don't know. I guess we're just
Bud Dupree was absolutely massive. He weighed into the combine at 270.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had Bauer weighed in at 260.
A little bigger than I thought, but yeah.
Just a tad bit bigger.
Yeah, he was powerfully built. But, you know, like I said, this guy showed that he could put on the weight already. And, you know, it's only going to get better once he gets into an NFL program.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, 6'6", 244, put up a 4.6 at the combine. Obviously, you know, the 40-yard dashes aren't the end-all, be-all. But, I mean, kind of like Bud has said, there's certainly room for growth. And, I mean, he's already – you know, as explosive as he is, it
it's going to be, I mean, in his case, it's going to be interesting to see how big he can get and, you know, if he can maintain, you know, 90% of that, okay, how much does that change things?
I mean, what's scary about him is he reminds me a lot of Brandon Gregory. He's just a very slim guy who I don't think can actually turn that speed that he has into power. He can't actually get any push against the SEC tackles, so I think it's going to be a lot tougher for him to get push against actual NFL tackles.
Alden Smith every
is
guy
a very good
a
example coming out. Well, I get that, but you want a guy who can at least do a little bit of damage outside of just trying to get around the edge like Alden Smith. Once Alden Smith kind of had that line fall apart around him and just kind of lost the talent around him, he wasn't doing anything. Part of it is because he's addicted to drugs, but just...
Yeah, I was gonna say. Hopefully, Leonard Floyd is a little bit smarter than Randy Gregory. But I guess I'll parlay that into. Can you essentially be a one trick pony in this league anymore? Like Dwight Freeney lived off his spin move for seemingly an eternity. Can you have a player just essentially live off of one move essentially in this day and age, or is that pretty much you have to be well rounded? And you have to have a variety of moves, otherwise that's it.
I mean, to me, not a variety, but you can't live on one move. I always teach, you know, the tool belt has to be, you know, 2 to 3. What you typically teach is that you got to have a go-to move and a counter off the go-to move. So if your go-to move is the spin and, you know, someone's picking up on that, then what's your counter, you know, for that? So usually that's what I would teach because, like I say, like if you treat pass rush like a menu where you just have all these options, then you're never going to get good at one. You're never going to master any. And you're just going to be either average or bad at them. So, there's guys that, you know, they do what they do. Like Robert Quinn is pretty much, he's going to get off the ball and rip it lean around the edge, run the hoop on you. That's kind of just what he does. And, you know, every once in a while he'll counter back inside if you try to overset too far. But, you know, that's just kind of where he is.
I mean, I think it's possible, but you have to be very, very good at what you do, as you gave that Dwight Freeney example. And it's not so much even a single move. It's just the kind of style you play with. I'm not a big fan of a lot of the speed guys if they don't have anything beyond just trying to get around the edge. Brandon Gregory, Leonard Floyd, a lot of these guys that I've seen, that they can put up some nice sack numbers, but they're not consistently doing damage, in my opinion. If they go up against a good tackle, they're going to get shut down. And compared to, like, Randy Gregory, I think it was, he had, like, 17 sacks or something like that the year before he declared, or versus Leonard Floyd, who had – he didn't even have 5 this last year. So it makes me worry about a lot of those guys.
But he's in a different position. He's playing a different position.
That is true. Just looking at the stats, even before that, before he switched to being a 4-3 linebacker, he only got like 6 sacks a year.
Okay.
But it concerns me because when I watch a guy on tape, I want to see a guy who's consistently getting pressure, not a guy who's getting these flashy sacks. The big reason why I didn't like Emmanuel Ogba is I want to see a guy who consistently can generate pressure, consistently get in the QB's face, push a tackle off balance. And even if you're not even a power guy, if you're a speed guy, just get around the edge or somehow get in there and do damage, disruption. But with a lot of these speed guys, and you see even sometimes with power guys, if they're not